Algar Productions.
This is the Post-Atomic Horror, the most comprehensive Star Trek podcast ever produced. Your hosts are Ron Algar Watt and Maggie Robotham. Episode 524, A Quality of Mercy.
Hi, friends. Welcome to the Post-Atomic Horror. I'm Al.
I'm Maggie.
And we've made it through a season of Strange New Worlds already.
Yeah, a pretty thoroughly enjoyable season of Strange New Worlds. There was a couple of lesser episodes.
Yeah, but of 10, I would say I enjoyed myself 7.
Yeah, just pretty good. Just when the Gorn show up, basically.
Yeah, or, you know, that one Gorn hater.
Mm-hmm. Anything Gorn related, that's the issue here. No Gorn.
Yeah, pretty much that. And that problem's not going to go away, by the way.
Ugh.
I know.
The show's a real Gorn supremacy.
God, that's terrible. Oh, man.
I used to tell Mal that when we were back on Twitter, I would live for when you would, like, respond to one of my jokes with a ha.
Mm-hmm.
And now I live for a just quiet, oh, my God.
Why? Why did you used to want to make me laugh and now you want to make me groan?
I mean, look, they're both good, but like...
Oh, all right. I do know that the season 3 premiere is called Hegemony, so like the Gorn thing's not going to go
That can
away,
only be Gorn.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, unless it's that contemporary slang thing I don't like and it's Hey G Money, but I doubt that.
I doubt that too, but you know what? I want to see what episode that becomes.
Yeah, exactly. But this one, I remembered being great, and I did something that made it less great, but we'll get into that.
Yeah. Do your episode, and then we'll talk about your crime.
Let me tell you about, mercy. The Enterprise follows directions to Outpost 4. Go past Outpost 3 and look for signs. If you see Outpost 5, you've gone too far. Outpost 4 is not affiliated with the Sunoco Station, a facility located right at the edge of the Romulan Neutral Zone. While popping in for a pee break, some snacks, and to browse the maddening selection of extremely abridged books on tape, Pike meets the station's commander and his son, who is one of those kids from Pike's face-melting future. One of the kids who didn't actually survive the accident. Understandably a bit flustered, Pike returns to his quarters to write a tragic future-changing letter to the kid, where he's greeted by a future version of himself. Look, I'm a pretty prominent Star Trek guy, and I'm no stranger to Star Trek shit happening, so it's entirely possible you're future me, but I'm gonna need some proof. So the older dude mentions their first horse, whose name was Sir Naze-a-Lot. This is canon. That horse actually has his own memory alpha page. No, really. Just be sure to include the hyphens or it won't come up in a search. Anyway, now the captain is convinced and the ghost of Chris Pike Future shows him a vision of what would happen if he went through with writing that letter. Now, with the help of a magic Klingon time crystal, it's 6 years later, and Pike is in charge of the Enterprise as the classic episode Balance of Terror begins to unfold. Hang on, this is after the Menagerie, which was my final canonical appearance. I found this out when I was updating Sir Naze-a-Lot Memory Alpha's entry. Then he remembers this is all hypothetical and he got here via a magic Klingon time crystal, so he does his best to just roll with it. And ends up joining forces with Sam Kirk's brother, a character I can only think of as James Timu Kirk. This is probably for the benefit of anyone who didn't screen Balance of Terror before the episode like I did, so you can directly compare the two captains and their leadership styles in real time. And the bottom line is this. In the original timeline, unnamed Romulan commander who looks exactly like Spock's dad and Kirk matched wits for about an hour. This resulted in an extremely tense of what the Mighty Monarch refers to as cat and also cat. And it ended rather famously with unnamed Romulan commander who looks exactly like Spock's dad remarking that, in another reality, he might have called Kirk friend. But now it is in fact another reality, and Pike's whole "what if we acted like rational humanoids and not coked up adrenaline junkies" approach is not the even match that Kirk was. Turns out the best move in a blinking contest is not actually blinking, no matter how bad that might be for your eyes or how many eyelids you have. This results in a war with the Romulans and, most significantly of all, the loss of Spock, whom we all know is a load-bearing character in this franchise. Remove that Jenga block, and none of the cool shit Spock does for the next 100 years or so even happens. It also fucks up the Kelvin timeline, which Paramount can do just fine without your temporal meddling, Chris. All right, fine, Pike says. I won't prevent the deaths of those kids. Because if this season has an overarching theme, it is this. Sometimes you gotta let some children die to build a better world. Oh, and then in the most tacked-on, shit, the season's over, ending ever conceived, Una's arrested for that stuff she admitted to back in episode 3.
So first things first, the only thing I can ever think of when I hear the word Sir Nasalot is Sir Nasal Snot.
Yeah, I tried to slow down and say Nas-a-lot because it's hard to lose the, not wordplay, mm-hmm. but, you know,
nope.
what it's actually saying. Yeah,
the grossest knight in King Arthur's court.
Mm-hmm.
And you will go on a mission to find the Holy Grail for me. What?
The Holy Neti Pot.
Ugh. I'm sorry. It just there's a lot of pollen in Camelot today.
Also, horse noses.
Oh God!
Like that is a sinus cavity that can really fill up.
That's nasty.
Uh huh.
Horses got big holes.
I know. Wow. That's if we ever start making t-shirts again, there we go. Horses got big holes, Maggie.
Write it down.
Uh-huh. You still got your copybooks? Pull them back out.
Yep. We never told you to get rid of those.
That's true. All right. Where to begin?
So tell me about what you did.
Well, I watched Balance of Terror first, because mm-hmm. I remember I saw this when it aired in 22 or whatever, and I just remembered that it like heavily referred to this. I didn't
yes.
have a lot of specific memories. So I was like, what if I watch that first and then I really pick up on all the references? And what I figured what that would do is either enhance the experience or open myself up to unflattering comparisons. And unfortunately, the latter was true.
Uh-huh.
There was a lot of like, particularly in the casting, which
mm-hmm.
I'll get into my bad thing in a minute. But
yeah,
the guy who was supposed to be like Kirk's main adversary, mm-hmm. like the Romulan commander, who I don't think ever got a name. The guy, he was played by Mark Lennard, who we all know went on to play Sarek. And
yes.
like, he, like, even watching it again after all this time and knowing what to expect, he really, really shines in that episode.
Mm-hmm.
Just every carefully thought out moment, like, he did this, and now it's my turn, and I'm going to do this. And every... my underlings are trying to undermine me, and I will prevent that while I'm still facing off in this thing that could cause
yep.
a whole war. And the fact that I'm very familiar with his performance as a stoic Vulcan, but seeing him really like emote and play a villain, but always a sympathetic villain. He's
yep.
so good.
Yep.
And then this guy they got here is a doughy nothing.
Hello. Hi. Want to start a war? I am other Romulan commander.
Turning into Marvin the Martian a little bit.
I mean, that would be something. The thing they fire at the Enterprise is kind of like an Illudium Pu-36 explosive space modulator.
It's not that, basically. Fires yeah. a big space ball at you.
That's pretty good. They mentioned
yeah.
in the TOS episode, they mention a plasma weapon, and so we get to see it here, and that's pretty cool. But like, also visually, like, yeah, of course it's the 60s and it's cheap, but the Romulan ship had some color to it. There's a lot of purple. And like
mm-hmm.
here, they're going with that next gen. Everything from next gen on makes the Romulans black and green, and that is it.
Yeah.
And everything's green and very dark, and the Romulans are in that
standing
sort of TNG,
desks only.
Yeah. And Romulans are in that sort of TNG, like bulbous forehead design, which
yeah,
kind of undercuts the whole... oh my God, they look like Vulcans.
Yeah, it really kind of does.
Like that was half the point, was like, this is the first canonical appearance of the Romulans. And oh my God, we've never seen them. We fought a whole war. We didn't mm-hmm. see them. Oh God, Spock, they look just like you. And here they don't really.
Yes. No, so I mean, because like you got to imagine in Star Trek, there's like an infinite number of like bumpy headed aliens and stuff,
of
you
course.
Know, like it's like, well, they yeah. look like Spock or the Derlothians or the
mm-hmm.
Tildickians.
The Tildickians, exactly.
The Tildickians.
Mm-hmm.
Nailed it. I used to do this shit when we did Endeavor all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but like, we've met hundreds of those aliens, and yeah,
mm-hmm.
you're right. They are They are all sort of interchangeable.
But yep.
Just a lot of the choices they made didn't work for me. Like, it was super cool to do this alternate take. Like, Chris, if you keep being the captain, the other guy's not going to be a captain, and that other guy was there for some pivotal moments in history.
Yeah.
Here's what would happen if it was you instead of him. That's a great idea for an episode.
Yes. And but also picking, like, one of the best episodes, or, like, early episodes of the original series. The problem there.
Episode 15, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, I keep, whenever I go back and watch original series, which has been a while, I don't think I've seen this one since we reviewed it on this show 15 years ago.
Right. Like, do you go back to original series often? I've only done it a couple of times.
Occasionally. I keep meaning to for this show. Like, I wanted to watch Amok Time before Spock Amok, and I forgot to. But, like, this time I did remember. And the fact that so many of the bangers come in season one, early season.
Yeah.
Like, the Corbomite maneuvers, like, episode 5 or something.
That one's real fucking early, because the Baylock puppet's at the end of all the end credits. So they're like, oh, we got this shot of this puppet.
And this one's episode 15, which isn't even halfway through season one. Like, it's just, like, so many of their great episodes happen, right? Like, they had their shit figured out real early. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, here's the issue, is that you take an episode of, like, a pretty great episode of a show that is pretty great, and compare it to a fucking science fiction masterpiece.
Mm-hmm.
Like a phenomenal episode of science fiction television.
Yeah, but they invited the comparison. Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, and
need to be aware, like, you know, when DS9 did Trials and Tribulations, well, we're being compared to the most well-known episode of the original series. We better be good.
Yeah, and this wasn't a bad episode. Like, on its own terms, I liked it. Just by comparison, it's like, oh, why did you make these choices?
I mean, I didn't watch that episode, and I had a great fucking time, and I remembered having a great fucking time watching it the first time around.
Yeah, same. But this time I thought, for the sake of critical analysis, for the sake of our show, like, maybe I could go spot some details or notice where the paths diverge and wonder why the writers made those choices and that kind of thing. And it didn't really get a lot of that, because anytime they made a significant change, they told us. They said, oh, by the way, here's Kirk. Here's what he would have done.
Yep.
So you didn't need, which is good writing. Like, you don't need to have done the homework first. I appreciate that. But most of the changes they made, I didn't care for. Most of the updates in the aesthetic, I didn't care for. I will say, this is a minor thing. The original episode is framed by a couple getting married. It opens with Kirk performing an onboard marriage, and it gets interrupted by Red Alert, and by the end of the episode, one of them dies.
Yes.
And in this one, they open with that same wedding, and Pike's performing it instead. Mm-hmm. And the two people they cast as the versions of those that couple look so much like.
Oh, no shit. That's awesome.
That was such a great little, like, they couldn't pass for those people, but I instantly, even if it wasn't a wedding, even if they had just been milling in the background, I'd be like, oh, that's them.
That's those guys. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. And little choices like, okay, the wedding chapel was a bit more filled out. Like, that's just because we got more of a budget.
Yeah,
we have
a budget now, you know?
Yeah. One thing that really stood out to me from the original episode was, and this was early days, I think they filtered a lot of this out as they went, but it was a lot more multicultural than maybe some of the other episodes were.
Mm.
Like, the wedding had an Asian woman, a black woman. Like, there was a moment on the bridge where the navigator had to go do something, and Uhura stepped into that station and just did that job.
Oh, cool.
Like, Uhura hardly got to do anything by season 2 and 3, but early on, she was just one of the interchangeable pieces on the bridge, and she could do any of the other jobs, which was great.
Captain, I can do literally anything else in this room. No.
I did cross-training on this very ship in every department, so I know a little bit of everything. I'm not an expert, but I could definitely do a passable job.
No. Stay in your chair. This will be me and my two friends. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
Keep that.
And I will be taking as many lines from Leonard as I can.
Mm-hmm. The hell you will. Also, I don't want to... Ethan Peck is great. I like him a lot. But just being reminded, oh shit, right, Nimoy.
Yeah.
Fuck, he was good.
I was on Tumblr last night, like after I watched this episode. Yeah. And there was a poll going around that was like, who's the best Spock? And it lists Nimoy, Ethan Peck, and Zachary Quinto. Yeah. And it's like, what are you talking? Like, look, I like both those other two guys. I thought they did a great job. But what are you talking? Like,
the poll should be, who played the best replacement Spock? Then
yeah.
It's a contest. Then yes. It's a, between Zach Quinto and Ethan Peck. I don't know. Like, there's merits to both, but when you put Nimoy in there, it's not a contest.
Yeah, no. The man, like, created the character.
Yeah. And just the nuance, like, he also defined every Vulcan, basically, mm-hmm. for all the performers to come.
Yeah.
Like, and he did a great job of it. And, mm-hmm. yeah, so... But that said, Ethan Peck was all right in this episode. He didn't stink up the joint or anything. It's just, again, I really shouldn't have watched one and then the other.
Yeah, everyone on this show is doing a perfectly cromulent job.
I do like the idea, like, we kind of get a sense of, oh, Kirk brought this person with him, which is why, like, Bones should have been there, but Bones is over on the Farragut with Kirk.
Yeah.
So that makes sense, because that's his friend. Mm-hmm. And, like, what else? Rand should have been in this episode.
Yes,
honestly,
absolutely.
That wouldn't have been a bad choice either. Do some wicker hair on somebody.
Yeah, we get an off-screen Scotty appearance that's like,
mm-hmm.
hey, it's Scotty, but like when we actually get around to casting Scotty, we won't have to worry about like.
I think it's the same guy.
Is it? That's cool.
Memory Alpha said such and such steps in as the third person to play Scotty after James Doohan and. What's his name? Simon Pegg.
Simon, yeah.
And so, and I'm pretty sure that's the guy. I think they used his voice here, and he'll appear on screen sometime in season two.
Yeah.
So
now Mal, I had this on. Mal was just like, "Is that Scotty?" I'm like, "Yes," but with enough like,
yeah, with
if
enough
they have
leeway,
to,
they
could be like, that could
him.
Be any Scottish engineer. It's not like he's the only one.
No, he did that. We're pushing it as hard as we can, Captain. Like, it's come on.
I'm a miracle worker.
That's Montgomery fucking Scott there.
The man's so Scottish, they named him Scotty.
Mm-hmm. So, but your good thing, despite all of my specific nitpicks, is?
I love all the direct references to Balance of Terror. I love that shit. Mm-hmm. The episode, so the alternate reality almost feels like it's being shot like an episode of original. Like, it has the feeling that Pike went to visit the TOS show, like,
yeah,
just in the
we're
way
using,
it's shot.
We're using our existing sets, but
yes.
They're filming it as though, like the bridge always feels so big and open because they have a nice big open bridge set. But here, because this is a Cold War submarine episode, it's shot much more claustrophobically, and it really works.
There's a lot of tight shots on people. They bring back the thing I love, which is the light only over people's eyes.
So that, I don't know if I've talked about this before. Mm. Amanda has tried to recreate that. Amanda does considerably, like, pro-level photography.
And, yes.
Like, she photographed your wedding. She's done, like live events, like, with people you would have actually heard of, like, comedians you would have actually heard of. Like, she's done, you know, pro-level photography. And she has such a hard time duplicating that effect. It is tricky.
That's interesting. Like, I wonder what that is.
She's done so much reading and so watched so many videos, and she's got it close, but it consumes her, the fact that she can't quite nail it. It is a difficult. So the fact that they went to the extra trouble to do this thing that is apparently not easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it looks cool.
Yeah. There's also a bit where they just replicate the shot where, like, the reveal of the Romulans when everyone looks over at Spock and, like, he does the eye arch and everything. It's fucking great. It's ruined a little bit by the aforementioned forehead bumps, which make them not look exactly like Vulcans, but, you know, I still appreciate it. The music's very TOS.
Oh, yeah. We get some real, like, big horn fanfare at the commercial breaks, which are great. Yeah, exactly.
It's just like, oh, my exact shit. How wonderful.
One thing I wish they'd done, like, I'm not gonna reopen all the shit I just complained about. There's a bit near the end where the phasers aren't firing because they're broken, and Spock goes down to fix them, and that happens here, too, and he dies.
Yeah.
But some fucking Joker gas, which, like, the bane of any 60s TV hero's existence.
Just gas.
Brightly colored gas. It's not purple. It's like orange, I think. But it's so...
That's
it's
still Joker gas.
Brightly colored gas just starts shooting out, and I wish they'd replicated that. Mm-hmm.
Captain, the Smilex gas has leaked from the ship's engines.
Oh, new and improved Joker products.
Just make sure you don't combine the shampoo with the conditioner.
Mm-hmm. No, a lot of the visual touches were good. Like I said, I had some problems with some of the choices, but there were a lot of great nods. And
like, it really feels like they put the work in on this.
Oh yeah, and this, like, everything about Strange New Worlds has always felt like a labor of love. Like, mm-hmm. people who really love and aren't ashamed of the 60s in, like, Next Gen, especially when it first came out.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
We're not the 60s. It's the late 80s now. We're better. And
they were
I appreciate
desperate.
That.
Yeah.
I can appreciate that. Like,
yeah.
At the time, the feeling was, oh, it was the 60s and they had no money. Mm-hmm. And this show is charming, but it's cheap. And we can make it better now. And like, that's good. Okay. That's fine. But also, it's now been 60 plus years. And well, 60 years as of this year.
Yes.
And the
60, no plus or minus years.
That's true. Mm-hmm. And like, we can kind of just sort of look, but yeah, it's a little cheap, but also, come on, the aesthetic is fucking great.
Like, and this rules.
The show loves
that. Let's
just
make it look like it could if they had any money.
Yeah, exactly. And on the Enterprise, I think they nailed it here. On the Romulan ship, I think they did not nail it.
So here's I really like the costuming on the Romulans in this one.
Yes, I agree with you there. They did the sort of half purple, half like gray, like it's the same design. Yeah.
The two guards in the football helmets, the classic ass 60s Romulan football helmets. I'm just like, yes, you got it. But yeah, the ship itself is so boring. It looks like a black box theater almost, with just some control panels standing in it.
But it's like the thing I complained about. Well, I complained about a lot during Enterprise, but aesthetically, one of the things I hated about Enterprise was everything was gray and every ship was dark. And like, I love colors in Star Trek and the original Romulan ship was colorful as hell. And like, you have an opportunity to say, this is what next gen era Romulans look like. That's fine. But 100 years before, it looked like this. It's okay. You don't have to retcon them all to be green all the time, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, but yeah, whatever.
Our Romulan colors of green. Well, how does that differentiate you from the Borg? A different type of green.
Mm-hmm. It's not.
Yeah.
But aesthetically, this is my good thing. Mm-hmm. I love seeing that red TOS movie era uniform on Pike.
Like, yeah.
Pike shows up and he's wearing the I like that uniform.
Yeah.
And Memory Alpha informed me the last time we'd seen one of those on screen was the fucking, what was the name of the episode? The Voyager episode where Tuvok flashes back to
when he's on the Excelsior. Yeah, yeah.
I think it's called Flashback, actually. Mm-hmm. I think it was called The Bus That Couldn't Slow Down.
I remember, like, back in, like, the 90s era, like, that was the uniform that they would do in flashbacks.
Yeah, like Picard's early days, he would wear that uniform. Yeah.
But then, they stopped doing that after. Like, it really felt like when I saw that, I'm like, I haven't seen that uniform in forever.
Yeah, since mid-Voyager. They never used it in anything else, which is all the time travel and everything else. I'm amazed they've never, done that. But I guess we don't talk about that point in history very much either.
I guess, because just we're either in the TNG setting or, like, pre-original series setting. Like, we're very far away from the movie era right now in, like, modern stuff.
Which I've always said, like, there's a whole period there where it's, like, first war with the Cardassians and, like, Captain Sulu. Like, there's some interesting stuff there.
Yeah.
But, anyway. Oh, I guess fucking the Section 31 movie took place then, but...
Oh. That doesn't count.
Sure doesn't.
Like a rake to the face, the Section 31 movie.
Yeah. Yep. But in addition to the, like, my good thing isn't just that piece of costuming. It's Ensign Mount did a good job playing his older self because he's not that much older. Like, there's such a tendency for, and we saw this a lot in original series and Next Gen especially, where someone, and DS9, I'm thinking of Julian doing it once, like
Oh, Julian,
the old version of myself.
It was so bad.
Yeah.
Look, Alexander Siddig, great in a certain range. Like, and I would put him in such high regard as like Cary Grant. Like, once you know how to cast him, that's great. Don't move an inch from that, though.
Yeah.
Like, there's great actors who can do that, but they just don't have a lot of range, that's all.
Alexander Siddig doing his fucking Mr. Burns impression.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know, Dex. What should we do?
But he, like...
Garrick, who is that lollygagger?
That's Homer Simpson's. Oh, God, that works really well.
Yeah, it does.
I'm just a simple tailor, sir.
You know that dream where you're in bed and they fly in through the window?
There's such a tendency for people to overplay that, but like the quality of his voice was a little different, and you could tell because he was talking to himself the whole time.
Yep.
And the makeup was subtle, little more gray in his hair, maybe an extra line or two in his face, but mostly just the same guy.
Yeah, it's a guy from like not that too far
maybe
into the future.
10 years, because it's like this episode largely takes place 6 years ahead, and then he's from further ahead than that after everything's been wrecked.
So. Yeah.
But yeah, no, that was all really good. And hey, big surprise, like once again for the almost every series we've covered, the captain, real good actor.
Mm-hmm. Surprising no one.
makes or breaks the series. I wouldn't even say Bakula wasn't bad, just that show was garbage.
I mean,
him for me. But
I've always said I understand the idea of hiring Bakula to be your captain for that. Like, I don't think he did a good job, but like I get the choice.
I think he played everything on the page. I don't think most of that was his fault.
Just everything on the page was dog shit.
Yes. But speaking of captains and screen presence.
Yep.
Time to get this out of the way. This is my bad thing. I do not like this Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
He does not have the screen presence or charisma needed for this character. Sam specifically calls out, like, he gets by on charm a lot of the time. And we meet him. He's like, hey. Like, he's not a sinkhole or anything. He's just not anything. Like, he's just some guy.
Yeah, it's...
You gotta come out swinging with him. My panties need to be melted clean off the first time this guy opens his mouth or gives you a little wink or something.
Mm-hmm.
And he just doesn't do it.
Like, the first shot of... They go for the big shot, because we haven't seen Kirk up to this point, but...
Yes.
Like, you know, Sam's here. He was name-checked in the first episode as, like... You're supposed to get,
brother.
Like, know about that reveal. You know he's coming at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it's just like, there he is, James T. Kirk. And you're just like, really? That guy?
Hey, guys.
That
and
guy,
again,
huh?
I don't think he's a, like, he's not a bad actor.
Mm-hmm.
He's not, like, a particularly, like, he's not bad looking. Kirk needs to set the screen on fire. Like, he needs to, like... Hey, Jim Kirk, how you doing? Like, you're not into dudes. You need to want to fuck him.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I have made no secret of my absolute jaw-dropping bisexual feelings for Chris Pine.
Oh, but totally. Like,
but also, young Shatner. Like, hot guy.
Hot guy?
This guy's just there.
Yeah, that's the, like, this guy is so... guest star of the week.
Yeah, and we've seen at least to season two, he's going to show up again.
Yeah, like, and
that's the thing.
You need to cast a lead for this character because he is a lead. Like,
yeah, and
he's
the
guy.
Here, the whole thing here is you've got to have, like, the whole contrast is Pike's being gentle. You can't be gentle. You have to be, like, impulsive and rash and take crazy risks. And this guy just didn't feel like that kind of a person to me.
And I get how hard it is to, like, because you don't want to be just ripping the character. Like, this is why Chris Pine was so good. Like, he got the character without doing an impression, you know?
Okay, but counter argument, Ethan Peck as Spock, Rebecca Romijn as Una, like Jess Bush as Christine Chapel, who admittedly not quite the same character, but still, like, they've pulled this trick off, and fucking Anson goddamn Mount as Christopher Pike, like, they've pulled this trick off flawlessly. Uhura, whose name I can't remember at the moment,
yep.
But like every single example of them trying again and saying, here's someone you know, but mm-hmm. here's a new version. They've nailed it. So why did they fit? And later, Scotty's also going to be great.
But yeah.
This is the one.
Yeah, you man. Get it. Like, and
it's the main one.
So, like I said, I was watching this with Mal, and Mal's sister came in and was like, oh, that's What's-His-Face from Vampire Diaries, which I guess he was, like, the lead of. And, okay. like, so the guy can lead a series. Does not feel yeah. like it.
I just don't think he's right for this role. Again, sure. I didn't get the feeling he's a particularly bad actor or that he has no screen presence. He just needs to, pull focus away from every single character. Yeah. Like, that's Kirk, man.
Yeah. It's like, just, I don't think I dislike him as much as you do, but like he's so guest starry.
Yeah, it's because he loomed. Like, I'm not going to say, oh, that's my audience identification character, because no way, of course not. But also, in a little, like, he is the classic ADHD risk seeker.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he wants to fucking orbital skydive. He wants to, all that shit. Mm-hmm. And like, that's the part of him I've always said, yeah, I get it. If he sits still, he will die.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I don't get that impression from this guy at all.
No, he's just very. Just he feels like an older Kirk too.
I had this note. He simultaneously seems too old and too young for the role, and I can't quite articulate what that means yet, but that's how I feel.
Yeah, like he doesn't feel like just became captain of his first ship, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just something off there.
Youngest captain in the fleet.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, Pike's captain girlfriend seems about 14.
Yeah, she really does. Like,
I think her.
I like her too, but like, she's supposed to
be in charge of a ship.
Yeah. It's just like, hey, how's it going?
Mm-hmm. Do you need a booster seat?
Yeah, man. Like, you just get here from drama club after school. Like,
I would like to serve you some wine with this pasta I'm making, but I need to see ID first.
Yeah, please.
Yeah. No. Okay. To be clear, she doesn't seem age inappropriate for Pike to date. But
no,
she doesn't seem like she should be in charge of a ship. And again, if Kirk's whole deal is youngest captain in history, which that was his deal, then she probably shouldn't be around.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Hey, Captain Pike. How's it going? Oh, hi.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Captain Girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all of this being said, first of all, I'm going to play my quote here, which is Sam preparing us for Kirk. And this is one of the reasons why Kirk fell flat for me, because they did such a good job with this.
Should we be worried that he's going to start a war?
Look, I'm not going to say that Jim isn't a pain in the ass. He is. He's a huge pain in the ass. But the truth is, he's as fine a captain as Starfleet has.
Just really made me laugh.
Well, like,
yeah, he's, well, yeah, yeah. He's a lot.
I really liked the, I love Jim. We don't get along.
No, and I didn't realize this, and I don't know if they said it out loud in this episode or they will say it later. He's still on the Enterprise in this alternate reality.
Yes.
And the reason he left in the Prime timeline is because Kirk took over and he's like, I am not working for my brother.
Yeah,
I quit.
No, that's not happening.
I'm going to go on this colony and I'm going to die from a flying pancake.
Yep. And Kirk's like, and I am going to be very sad about that for a while.
Till the credits roll.
Yep. About till the credits roll.
Then on to my next adventure.
Mm-hmm.
No consequences for this guy.
Nope. So long.
No, I loved that, and I love, like he's bracing Pike for, look, he deserves to be a captain. He's a good captain, but also, oh, Jesus fucking Christ.
Yeah.
I love that. And there's a thing, I'm sure you picked up on this too. Every time, like, they could have overplayed this and they didn't. Every time he says something, Spock's like, shit, that's a better idea.
Yeah.
Like, he never says it, but the look on his face is like, I'm sorry, Captain. I love you, and you have been a great captain to me and kind of a surrogate dad because my dad kind of sucks.
Yep.
But everything that guy says just makes so much more sense than anything you've ever said, and I need to be with him now.
Yeah, I might need to just build my entire life around this man.
And it's like, again, they never say it out loud.
No.
It's all in Ethan Peck's, like, you know, he does the eyebrow raise whenever Kirk says something, or he follows him across the room, or like, and it's real good. Because, yeah, they're like, Abrams knew this, or the guys who wrote his script knew this. Their friendship is the cornerstone of everything.
Yeah. That's it right there.
Yeah.
This is and the brick that we build Star Trek on.
Yeah, that's a good brick.
Mm-hmm.
It's a solid brick.
Yep.
So Your Bad Thing is another one of those comparisons to Balance of Terror.
This was a weird one. It was a very strange choice to make. Ortega's the racist red shirt in this episode?
Okay, like, let me step back real quick and remind you. Like, you probably remember this, but just since it's fresh in my
head. Oh, yeah, please.
There was a guy named Stiles sitting in the Chekhov seat. This is pre-Chekhov. And his grandfather had fought the Romulans during this war where they didn't ever see the Romulans. Mm. And so he's carrying this familial grudge. And so he's like, Romulans, you can't trust them. You can't. Rah, rah, rah. And then when we see that they look like Spock, he's like, and we can't trust Spock either. He's probably a spy. Mm-hmm. And that's half the episode. And then it's nice because it comes like in that classic 60s way, comes around at the end where Spock saves his damn life. And he's like, shit, I was wrong about you. I shouldn't be so racist about it.
In another reality, I could have called you friend. Yeah, commander would be fine.
Yeah, I'm your boss. We are not friends. Workplace proximity associates.
Yeah.
But then in this episode, that guy's not here, and instead...
Yeah, so, like, they use Ortega's instead, who is a character that I have complained about us not having a whole lot of time with, but definitely...
Say, what have you complained about? Okay, not being enough. That tracks.
Yes, there needs to be more of it.
And there will.
But, like, one, we know what Erica's like, whereas that guy was some rando who was only there for the one episode. Like... Ortega's is a pretty laid-back character for the most part, you know?
Yep. Like, I'm sure she gets mad at some stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But and also, specifically, she knows Vulcans. She's implied that she's gotten in the middle of their romantic entanglements.
Yes. Like, it's so weird to have her be the ones that, like, sir, we can't trust them. They're monsters. Like, that's weird. And she doesn't have the moment where she's like, my dad fought the Romulans in the war or whatever, you know?
No, but she does the same spin around in the chair and glare at Spock thing. And it's like, hey,
and two,
6 years in the future, you've been working side by side with him for years. You know and trust him. What is wrong with you?
Like, yeah, you're not just meeting this guy like possibly this other dude could have, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And two, we have a hot-headed warmonger character at home who already does this kind of thing and would make perfect sense for this role, but for some reason, she's over on the Enterprise and kind of huggy. What a weird choice.
Well, I think, first of all, I think the implication is once she goes off on her quest to find that orphan's family, she'll come back a little more mellow, which was... I don't know if that happens or not. I don't remember, and I haven't seen enough.
Yeah.
But I think that's the implication. My headcanon is she went over to the Enterprise, banged it out with Kirk, and she has mellowed out considerably.
Yep, I was thinking the exact same thing.
Yep. Like, but, I don't hate that it's 6 years later and she's figured her shit out. That's fine. But and you're not wrong that, yeah, we do have a character like that. It should not have been Ortega's.
No, absolutely. Not at all. Like, this is the perfect opportunity to bring in that exact character.
I feel like they said, shit, our regulars don't have a lot to do. And Benga's hardly in this. Chapel's hardly in this. Ortega's could be Stiles, I guess.
No, it's such a reach. Like,
it is. You're right.
Just, you know, no.
Yeah, I agree with you.
And Pike has that moment, too, where she's like, yeah, Captain, he's like, not now, Ortega's. It's just like, this is not this, like, this is not that character. It just isn't.
Mm-hmm.
I get that it's 6 years later also for her, but, like, you gotta tell me something.
Yeah, what happened? Like, we do get, I mentioned, and we'll talk about this again in a sec, but the thing at the end where Una gets arrested, like, they do lay the groundwork for that, where Pike's trying to figure out what's different and where everyone is, and he's like, where's my first officer? Where's Una? And and I can't remember who says it. Maybe it's Spock says.
Oh, it's La'an when she comes over from
The
Enterprise.
That's right. Like, where's Una? And
because,
like,
Pike assumes if she's not here, she's on the Enterprise.
The Farragut.
The Farragut, excuse me.
Yeah. Yeah, with her friend.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, Captain, none of us have talked to her. Remember, she's in, like, jail.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. So, like, that's not a bad, like, setup, I guess.
Yeah.
But also, again, that happens in episode 3, the things that she got in trouble for, and it really feels like, and then she got arrested, set up next season, whatever.
Yeah. Like, we really could have just ended this one, you know? Like, we can start season 2 with that.
That would be a great pre-credits hook. She gets arrested, and then we do the courtroom episode that I feel like we're going to wildly disagree on.
Yeah, I love that courtroom episode, so we'll see.
I hated it. It was, they might as well have been black on the left side and white on the right, but we'll talk about it next week.
What else?
But you absolutely agree that they tacked that on, like...
Oh, yeah.
And then Una went to jail.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's like, you know, it doesn't always, I know that it's the last episode of the season, but like,
yeah,
we could just,
no, they
could have
plotted
end,
it better.
You know?
They could have plotted it better. Yeah. Also, like, one of the selling points of the show was it's not quite so episodic, and it hasn't been, and I've liked that. There are threads that continue, like we set up Mbenga's daughter so that when that episode happened, it's not like, who's this?
Yeah.
But for the most part, it's not one episode continuing to the next one, which I like.
Yeah.
Because so far, Star Trek has been real bad at that, except for DS9.
And God knows if you want to, like, remind people of what happened earlier in the season, you can put one of those stupid, super spoiler-heavy previously on things at the beginning of the episode.
Yeah, because whenever they hit, like, these three things, you obviously know, okay, well, the next beat in that story is about to happen.
Yeah. I had a real rant about this in my notes last week, and I don't think I actually did it on the show, but good God, those things.
Yeah.
They really just like, hey, be prepared for this little revelation because...
Remember La'an and the Gorn and, oh God.
We would hate for you to be lost for even a microsecond.
That doesn't bother me exactly. I just think there'd be a more artful way to do it is all.
It's the people look at their cell phoning of modern TV that I've been reading about that makes me grind my teeth.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't always pay full attention to stuff I'm watching either. But also, when I miss something, I know that's on me. I don't blame the show for that. I know, shit, I dropped out. What did they say? And I rewind it, because that's a thing.
You don't need to, like, oh, let's make sure to repeat the premise of the show 18 times, like it's the first 5 panels of a Chris Claremont X-Men comic, so everyone knows exactly what the fuck is happening at all times.
That's how soaps are done, because they come out daily and you might have missed a few.
I guess that's true.
But here's the thing. Because soaps originally were created as something for women to do while they did housework. Mm-hmm. So they weren't always paying full attention. So they were designed that way.
Yeah.
Like, and, you know, I hate to just straight up gender it and say, oh, women do all the housework. But back then, that's what they, you know, that's what it was for. So.
Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway.
What else?
There was a moment, this is about Balance of Terror.
Yes.
But there's a moment where that guy Stiles, like, says some shit about Vulcans, and Kirk says, you need to leave your bigotry in your quarters.
Yep.
And I was just like, yeah. Also, shut up, Bill. Star Trek has always been woke, you ass.
Yeah. God. The fucking, every time some racist dipshit is like, ugh, Star Trek. It's so, like, it used to be about blam, blam, shoot 'em. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about, you dumb piece of shit?
There's some episodes like that, but usually it was teaching you some kind of Twilight Zone-y moral about not hating your enemy or whatever.
Yeah, that's the point, you idiot.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And that was my main takeaway watching Balance of Terror again, was how sympathetic the Romulans were.
Yes.
More than maybe... Next Gen and the others did. Like, their first appearance, these guys, shit, they're really interesting, and I feel bad for this guy who has just fought war after war, and he just wants to go home, and now he's stuck with this whole situation, and, like, I felt for him. And sometimes they just show up and they're like, yes, we have a secret door to our houses because we keep secrets because we're just a bunch of liars.
Love having a secret back door. It's fucking so stupid.
Everything's a secret to us because we're lying. Our ships go invisible because we tell secrets.
We're secretive. We only communicate via those paper things that you have to pick the color.
Wow.
Yeah. P-U-R-P-L-E. Oh, I'm sorry. We're Romulans. All of these are green.
Mm-hmm. I will say the one aspect they added to the Romulans that I did like when Fleet showed up. Well, one, they talked about the Praetor in the original episode, and we see her, and she's a woman, and that's nice.
Mm-hmm.
Always nice to hear from a woman.
It's always nice to hear from a woman.
But also, I liked the fact that Pike says, we definitely know he attacked the outpost, because look, we see his ship decloaking.
Yeah.
And he's assassinated for that, because that's a cloaking device. You're supposed to stay invisible. You got caught, stupid.
Yeah.
And that actually was a pretty good addition to the whole situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love
he wasn't
the
supposed
just,
to reveal the ship.
I love the just the execution in front of, like,
entire fleet. Yep.
Well, you know what's also a pretty good display of power that you're going to be telling everyone back at the Federation about? How about the fact that our entire fleet executed one ship for pissing me off?
Mm-hmm. What else?
And then the Romulan commander calls Pike up to go, we are going to die.
Mm-hmm. It's honorable.
Okay. Uh-huh. I just realized where I recognize, like, it's not this guy, but, like, I just realized now that he looks like the guy who plays the main alien in Galaxy Quest.
Yes! That same sort of moon face.
Yeah. It's you will save us.
Mm-hmm.
Captain Pike.
Oh, God. By the horns of Grabthar.
Grabthar, I will go Alan Rickman.
What a tremendous savings. All right. Anything else?
I think that's everything.
Oh, one thing from Battles of Terror. They mentioned the planet Remus.
Oh, yeah, they did. The Reman occupation or whatever.
No, they did. They mentioned that here.
Yes.
But specifically when they're patrolling the neutral zone, they're near the planets of Romulus and Remus.
Oh.
So that was there from day one. And when Next Gen finally said, here's what Remus is, it was stupid, but
yes,
it was
stupid. Well, it was a cave planet full of vampires, so.
Yep, sure was.
Hey, what do you think we've always had these Reman, like, we've always talked about Romulus and Reman. What do you think the Remans look like? Oh, I think they're cave vampires, obviously. Oh, that makes sense.
Well, let's see, we're going with the Roman thing, Romulus, Remus. They're probably werewolves. No, that's stupid. They're vampires.
Yeah.
Oh, much better.
People are going to get the werewolf thing right away. Let's shake things up. Vampires. The fuck are you talking about?
Well, we got Ron Perlman. He could be a vampire.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay. You know what? Maybe.
Yeah. All right. If we've got Ron Perlman to play a vampire, fine. Good. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But like a Nosferatu one that doesn't talk.
No.
Oh. Oh. Well. All right.
We'll cut all his dialogue.
Mm-hmm. Because we need more shins on.
We do need more shins on.
And his knives.
Al, his ship was a knife.
Oh, I know. I know, Maggie. I mean, look, he's no Krillin associate of Sneed.
No, but what is, really?
I guess that's true.
Crazy workaday world of ours.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why every now and then that phrase just pops back into my head. Krillin associate of Sneed.
I'm looking for Krillin associate of Sneed.
Okay.
Okay, cool.
Worf, you had a lot of ups and downs over the years, and that's the thing you went out on. That's the last significant thing I will remember about you.
Okay, you know Sneed, right? Everybody here knows Sneed? Oh, yeah, we know Sneed. Yeah, well, I'm looking for a guy who's friends with Sneed. His name's Krill.
Wait, I did it backwards. He's not Sneed, an associate of Krill.
Wait, hang on.
Wait, oh.
I'll come back in.
Mm-hmm.
Could really use another dramatic reveal that I'm on this show.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anything else?
I think that's everything.
Very well. Well, that's all for this time, and as I mentioned, they're going to pick up season two with the next part of that whole Una thing.
Yep.
Also, there was a whole comic that came out in the meantime that I thought was like, well, that's a weird place to continue this story, but that it had nothing to do with anything. So.
Oh, all right.
It was like the Illyrian something.
Those when they're good, they're great, but like...
So far, the Strange New Worlds ones have not impressed me, but that's because... Oh, go ahead.
it's anytime they do one of those, like, well, we'll put a mini out between seasons thing, you know, because Disco did it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's whenever they're trying to work around, like, well, you can't do this because that's what we're going to write about.
Yeah.
Okay, we have to carefully make it fit canon. Ugh.
Well, and like the thing is, I'm sure they sell the best because it's the show that's on the air.
Yeah, and it's going to be a year until you get to see the resolution of that. But look, this comic's out right now.
But like their best stuff is always like the stuff based around other like series that are over.
Yeah, exactly. And I would say anytime they've tried to, like, remember the DC comics coming out when the movies were coming out and they were trying to, like, here's what happened after Wrath of Khan.
Yep.
And then Search for Spock came out and they had to say, that didn't happen.
Yeah, there's a whole thing where they go back in time.
Yeah.
For some reason.
Well, look, they were doing their best.
Yeah.
But once Paramount says, this is the actual script, guys, fuck. Okay, Savick didn't serve on the Enterprise this long and so on and so on.
There's a thing I think about all the time where Bones is just like, Spock said, remember. What do I need to remember?
Mm-hmm. Oh, shit, I left the iron on.
Oh, no.
All right. Plot thread closed.
That's why the Enterprise really crashes at the end of Search for Spock.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no. A fire.
Captain, there is an iron here. It has not been unplugged. Get out! Get out of there. All right. So, yeah.
Bones left his oily medical rags.
Oh, no, my oily medical rags. Next episode is called The Broken Circle. So, look forward to that.
Yep.
The website is postatomichorror.com. If you want to write to us, it is postatomichorror@gmail.
Mm-hmm.
Patreon is patreon.com/Algar. You will be well ahead of everyone else and you'll hear extra bonus stuff. So, that's pretty cool.
Yep.
And that's all for this time.
Yeah. See you, folks.
Surnays a lot.
The Postatomic Horror Podcast is a co-production of Maggie Robotham and Ron Algar Watt. Copyright 2026. Please don't sue us. We're just doing this for fun.